Vegan Online Academy podcast, providing food for body and mind. My name is Carrie Harrison. I'm an educator with a master's in education degree, a bachelor's in science and psychology degree, and a certificate in plant-based nutrition. Today I'm talking to Brad Wheeler. We're going to be talking about the vegan movement and social movements of the past. Veganism is currently being described as the biggest social justice movement of our time. So how does it compare to other social justice movements of the past? And what predictions about the future of veganism can we make based on these comparisons?
Welcome back, Brad. It's absolutely fantastic to have you here on Vegan Online Academy podcast. We're going to be talking about vegan protests and social movements. So welcome to the show again. It has been noted that people who are vegan tend to be individuals who are happy to be different and to step outside of societal norms. So in general, people who go vegan tend not to be so concerned what others think of them. And in order for veganism to go mainstream, as I think it is going at the moment, we also have to be an attractive movement for everyday people to join, not just the outliers of society. And I really feel that this is happening now. So do you agree with this idea? Have you seen a shift towards a more inclusive social movement within veganism?
Yes, for the most part. Well, I think there's kind of two parts to this, right? So there's in within the movement, but also outside the movement. So like outside the movement, for example, is that you'll see restaurants that now cater to vegan stuff. They'll have more vegan options, or they'll have something like vegan friendly. People in general seem to be, maybe not take it seriously, but be more respectful of it. You know, of course, some of this may be motivated by economics, but people in general seem to be more open to it and more accommodating for it. You know, and definitely within the movement, you know, I'm speaking anecdotally here, but I mean, I've noticed it's a pretty big demographic, like broad demographics, when I meet up with other vegans. You know, I see, you know, it's not just a bunch of people from one social class, you know, or from one kind.
Yeah.
I've met people from different backgrounds, different countries. It defies the stereotype that they're all a bunch of white hippies living on the beach.
Yes, absolutely. Even in our little group, we have Brad and I belong to the same meetup group, and we have, well, there's myself from Scotland, there's a few Americans, male, females, and somebody from Kazakhstan comes along. So it really is far more mixed and diverse than it used to be. And I see that there's now a movement towards African-Americans as well. And I went to an amazing restaurant last week that was here in Houston, and it was just fantastic, completely vegan. And I was the only white person in the place, and it was just so good to see that. And like you say, it's not just a white movement anymore. You were saying that the shift in terms of the availability of food might be down to an economic driver, and I suppose that's no bad thing, and maybe a lot of social movements might be influenced and changed by economics, and that there is an argument to say that the free market economy might be one of the easiest ways that we can change it, because it's all about the dollar at the end of the day. So if more and more people are interested in veganism, more and more people are buying vegan products, then more vegan products become available, more people become interested in veganism because they see more vegan products, and so it becomes a cycle. How do you feel about that idea?
I'd say, you know, absolutely, economic decisions do matter. And it's funny, too, because I think that this is often underestimated today, at least here in the U.S. Partly that's because we've kind of moved away from a lot of the civil rights and social movements. We're kind of far removed. So you look at the history of Latinos here in America. Cubans were well-funded. Like, they actually had programs to give them money to go to school, loans for businesses. You know, they got money from the government, and then they invested in the community, and that community thrived. And there's something called Little Havana. Part of it was because of the money that they got from the government to start the businesses and things like that. And so that community really, really thrived, and they introduced a lot of people to Cuban culture. And then just in general, economically, once Latinos were a sizable portion and they were working in the factories, they were able to protest and cause boycotts. And actually, here's another point I wanted to bring up to that. Regards to economically, is that I think this is also, it's underestimated in another way as well. and that we need to open vegan restaurants and make it more economically feasible, even though it already is, right?
Yeah.
But it's the other thing is too, is that like, I remember there was this thing, I think it was John Oliver, he did this mini, one of these mini series things on chicken farmers and how they're basically under the thumb of like four monopolies of these chicken companies, like Tyson, Butterball, and two other ones.
Mm-hmm.
And basically how it is that these farmers get grades and like they get literal grades, like, okay, like you're doing well, so we're going to give you the equipment to be a good chicken farmer. Now, this is the only job that these people can do. So if they lose their farm or their equipment, they have nothing.
Yeah.
And basically that these groups, these corporations take advantage of them. I mean, this is the history of corporations. When the farmers tried to, in effect, make a political change, none of the representatives from hardly of all 50 states spoke up. So that tells you that probably those chicken companies own those chicken farmers and they can do whatever they want with it. So to me, like I don't, like many other vegans, I'm not okay with this, with chicken farming. But rather than say, well, too bad, what kind of pulling from the line of thought of Saul Alinsky, but economically as well, it's like, what if we were to give them options to move from chicken to agriculture?
Absolutely. I can't remember the name of the organization, but there is an organization in the UK that is doing just that. And they are helping dairy farmers in particular move from dairy and transition over to dairy to growing vegetables. And there's an amazing documentary, which I will link below, which is called something like, I think it's 72 cows, basically exactly what you're saying about giving the farmer the economic opportunity to change and transition and move into.
And this is the other thing too, it's just that economics is everything. You know, economics does matter because the corporations, like the dairy industry, the meat industry, they have the factories, they own things that contribute to the restaurants. And if part of bringing people in is through economic, you know, making things economically feasible, I don't mean financially, but like say, if you have 20 meat restaurants and one vegan restaurant, there's a mismatch there. It doesn't really make sense just to go to that one because it's like maybe you have to drive 40 minutes. But if you can start affecting those other places, they start opening more vegan restaurants or taking the business away from those corporations by converting those farmers, because it's a definite power structure there that those corporations have. I mean, just the way you market it to them, it's like, hey, are you tired of being taken advantage of? Because let's be honest, trying to argue with people philosophically doesn't always work.
No, it doesn't.
Right? It didn't work with me, right? I had to watch the Slaughterhouse Village.
Mm-hmm.
So to these farmers, it's like you can just bypass all that. You can just say that, well, hey, you can make more money this way and you won't be under the thumb of these people who are taking advantage of.
Absolutely. It reminds me of, there is work being undertaken to climate change here in America. And there is a young farmer that is trying to convince other farmers to farm in a way that is more environmentally friendly. And he's working in some areas where climate change is still seen as a dirty word. It's not accepted. It is seen as something that's being made up. And the attitude that this guy takes, this young farmer who wants to convince other people to start doing the right thing, is that he says he doesn't care the reason why they're doing it so long as they do it. And he is using the economics of the situation in order to persuade people to make the change, and it's working. Veganism is effectively the boycotting of all animal products. And boycotts in and of themselves haven't created change in the past, but they have been an important component of many social justice movements. I'm thinking in particular through the civil rights movement and the bus boycotts. So can we compare those movements of the past with what we're seeing in veganism today? And if so, how?
Yeah, so there are some similarities and differences. And there are people who are involved in the civil rights issues or movements who are also vegan.
Mm-hmm.
And who, very much for the same reasons, they were going to veganism. Like they were saying, we need to do this very much for the same reasons that they would be oppressed. And said that, well, you know, it's exploitation. It's feeding these people and these corporations who are not just oppressing us, but I mean, it's same principles that they're applying to people. They also apply to animals and to the environment. There are a lot of the same factors involved. So we kind of went over economically,
mm-hmm.
the economics of it, and that, you know, there's economic exploitation of workers and people.
So just to clarify that point, in terms of thinking particularly of meat factory workers and slaughterhouse workers, it's the most dangerous job to have in America. It's normally undertaken by people who have no other option, no other means of income, often undocumented workers who are completely taken advantage of. So that just is one example of the exploitation towards humans that's part of the animal agriculture industry.
Yeah, that's actually a good point, because they're exploiting not just the animals, but the people in it as well. They're all, this is actually something that if your listeners are not familiar with, just to look up Cesar Chavez. He was instrumental in the unionization of Latinos in the U.S., and he was also vegan. He said very much for the same reasons.
Interesting. Very interesting.
And he's not the first one to note the similarities in the exact same things that people were being exploited in animal. It's the same thing in the feminist movement. There were feminist vegans, mm-hmm. In the mid-19th century.
Well, some people will argue that you, just in the same way that you can't be an animal lover and eat meat, and that you can't be a feminist and consume dairy, because it is all based on the exploitation of females. So it's very difficult to be a feminist and drink milk, although I don't know how widely accepted or understood that is.
What's important to understand is that so a lot of people focus on the labels and things like that. Mm-hmm. Just look at the principles. It's like, look, they're stating, they're not necessarily reinventing the wheel, right? They're saying, look, the same principles that women are oppressed or exploited is the same way that animals are.
Yes.
And I'd say it's not really a surprise, because it is, so we kind of talked about economically, but also culturally, something that needs to be examined. Mm-hmm. So we had this thing in the U.S. called Manifest Destiny.
Yes.
Now, if you look this up in maybe like a textbook or the internet, you're not going to get the full context. So you have to really dig into it. And that Manifest Destiny was this idea that, like, the white people have some kind of, there's something that's special about them that makes them better and able to decide the destiny of other peoples, right? Yes. And it's very close to speciesism.
Yes.
Right. It's in fact, I would say it's the same thing. And to give you an idea of how Manifest Destiny played out in the U.S., again, we're going to refer to Cuba. I think it was when Cuba was revolting against Spain. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we had actual senators saying that these people don't know what's good for them.
Yes.
You know, if we have to settle it, we will. It was in the context of Manifest Destiny.
Yeah, so Manifest Destiny, just for listeners that don't know what that is the westward expansion, and the reason that was given that we must, Americans, white Americans, must go and to colonize and take over the whole of the country where the Native American Indians were, was because God was telling them that they knew best and they knew what to do, and therefore they must go and do this. And it reminds me just what you were saying there about this idea about when we look at slavery again in this country, and when they were looking at the abolition of slavery, there was an argument put forward that, well, but the slavery is in the best interest of the people that are enslaved, because they wouldn't be able to look after themselves, yeah. So we look after them better. So again, it's kind of these same notions that come around. You hear the argument, but what would happen to the farm animals if we didn't eat them? I've had people say that to me. So,
yeah. Yeah, it's the same thing with speciesism, right? It's the cultural zeitgeist of the moment. They're like, well, we know what's best. We have dominion.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's like, and so it sounds kind of outlandish to people who are non-vegan. And it did to me as well when I heard it a long time ago, when I wasn't vegan, that, you know, that this is slavery and it's like, or exploitation. But looking at those social movements, mm-hmm. and then looking at veganism, it's the same principles. And it's no surprise that these social activists, you know, these civil rights activists recognize the same thing.
Do you think it's possible to have the mass movement towards a plant-based diet without street protests and marches?
I mean, it depends on what phase. And I think this is something that needs to be addressed in the vegan movement. And this is actually another question I would have is what is the vegan movement? This is the difficult part to say, but we have to accept it. For any social movement, you have to endure. You have to be prepared that it has to start somewhere, but it may not always also be in your best interest. And so sometimes you only get one shot. Sometimes you only get one opportunity. But also the other thing too is that you have to consider perception. So like other people aren't vegan. So if you chain yourself to a fence at a slaughterhouse so a truck can't get in, you're doing the right thing. Unequivocally, you're doing the right thing. But you know what it looks like to other people? It's going to go onto the news to other non-vegans. It's that crazy vegan.
Yeah.
While you did the right thing, it didn't actually accomplish it. And so while I'm not saying that you should not take action, but you should take smart action.
Yeah.
And so that protest and boycotts are not always the appropriate action. It's like you have different tools in your toolbox, in your toolbox, right? And you can't just get a hammer and hammer everything. Yeah, everything looks like a nail once you have a hammer, right? Mm-hmm. To briefly digress into the Latino movement, and it went back into when the U.S. took Mexico, and it's somewhere in the 1800s. You know, they were discriminated against up until, you can say it's still going on now, but they didn't have their civil rights movement from like the 1800s until about like the 1950s is when it really started going. Arguably, if they had protested, you know, before then, they would have been shot. You know, we can take a look at the Native Americans, which is easy. You know, if you try to protest or get outside the school, they would just, you know, you can get shot. It's the same thing with Latinos and Blacks in America. So
very similar to what's happening in Hong Kong just now.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And although I would say that draw a contrast. So what they're doing in Hong Kong, I think, is correct because there's so many of them. And I don't know what the outcome is going to be. But in the case when you're a small movement, you don't want to get chained and shot for nothing.
I see where you're coming from.
So again, like we go like the guy who chained himself to the fence. If the truck driver just runs him over and it gets played to the news, all those non-vegans are just gonna be like, that crazy vegan got what he deserved. You kind of have to consider your position and what phase are you in. Like we're kind of out of the woodwork phase, right? We don't need to be secret. You know, I think we're a very small percentage of the population. So in fact, now is the time to organize and start getting things together, targeted protests, and targeted boycotts. You know, and before that, imagine like the Latinos or the Blacks, how many they got their civil rights.
I was just going to say, it reminds me of the Nelson Mandela quote, everything looks impossible until it's done. And then you look back and you're like, why did it take so long?
It's funny because that's probably how a lot of people feel like after they go vegan. Mm-hmm. It's like, it wasn't that bad. It was pretty simple.
It was really easy. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, of course, social movement demands more than that, but you have to work at it. And I think using your tools effectively is going to be more helpful than just trying to hammer everything that you think is a nail.
I agree. And I really like that analogy of trying to hammer things home because it really doesn't work. And I think that people are getting smarter with their protests now because I feel like the footage that's being collected by the SAVE movement and others who do go along to slaughterhouses, and rather than just waving placards and protesting, they're getting the footage of the animals and the truck just before they go into the slaughterhouse, and that those kind of images are then being spread across social media, and so reaching a far wider audience than just the people who might have seen them at the protest. So it is getting much smarter.
You know, it's not just all about protest and boycotts, right?
Yeah.
It's also about art. You know, it's also about culture. There were big pushes for art movements during the civil rights movement, right? They were very important because it puts a human face to it. It shows something. It's not just words. It's art is kind of the cultural zeitgeist of that time, which is important to show other people.
Yeah.
To give you an example of how important art is, whenever a dictatorship takes over, one of the first things they do is censor art and literature, art and other things as well.
Yeah, absolutely. As you're speaking, I'm thinking about the idea about all of the vegan books that are being written. I'm reading a book just now that's all about the intelligence of farm animals. I'm thinking about even on social media, things like Instagram, which is basically just pictures, but those pictures are being, you know, photographs are being beautifully taken and shared of either farm animals or vegan food. So all of this kind of plays into what you're saying about the power of art to change people's minds. And that's just at a very basic level. It kind of brings me onto this idea that there is a statistic that's often quoted in the vegan movement that currently only about 1% of vegans are actively involved in any kind of vegan activism. Now, there aren't that many vegans and we're spread across the globe. But if we were all brought together, we would be a sizable country in our own right. But the difficulty is we're spread across the globe. So I think that the reason that so few people are active and talk about their veganism is because they don't know how to get involved. They know that they don't want to protest at a slaughterhouse, or perhaps they can't. Like, for example, as a foreign national here in America, I cannot risk being arrested. So there's no way that I can go and protest at slaughterhouses. People might be in that situation, or they know that's not for them. They're not comfortable with that, but they don't know what else they can do. I always want to recommend to people to do whatever they can do. So you were talking about art there, and I myself as a teacher, I'm trying to educate people. But are there other examples of ways that people should be involved, or how would you recommend to people to get involved?
I think that, well, one, just being vegan is a good step. But also, too, I want to take into account in answering this question is everybody's situation. You know, there are people who probably work like 9-to-5 jobs just trying to keep the lights on or getting the bills paid, and then wondering what can they do to contribute. So probably the last thing, like you said, they want to do is protest a slaughterhouse. That can be one of the reasons. I think that just simple things, like just showing people that, you know, you're vegan and you're not a crazy vegan.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's so many things you can do. Like so here's something like simple you can do. So let's just say you make vegan food, right? Make an extra dish, go give it to a homeless person. Just share pictures on Instagram of animals that have been saved.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if someone's thinking about going vegan, just talk to them, be patient with them.
Yeah.
These little things aren't that little. In fact, you shouldn't even think of it as like little things. It's important. Think of it as like this. Is it important or is it not?
Yeah.
I would consider it more like that. So if you can't protest or you don't want to, there's so many things you can contribute. Talking to people, not being a jackass, excuse my French. And it goes on and on. Use your imagination.
I know that one really simple way that I started was that at work, quite often to boost staff morale, management would have us do things like do a chili cook-off. And to start with, I was like, well, you know, I'm not interested in that. I'm not going to get involved in that. But then I realized that that's a really good way to, you know, introduce people to vegan food. So I started to enter things like chili competitions at work, and people were like, "Oh, I really like that vegan chili. It's pretty nice." So there's all sorts of small ways that can add up to a bigger thing. And when all of us start doing all these small things, then it just starts making veganism seem more and more positive. And every time somebody is touched by the word vegan or hears vegan or sees vegan, then it's a drip, drip, drip effect until they may themselves start reducing their meat intake. I mean, for example, I was at the hairdresser's yesterday. Now, she is not somebody that I would have thought would have been interested in veganism at all. A lovely person, but when I mentioned that I was at a vegan restaurant, she was like, "Oh, really?" And she really wanted to know more about it. And I think that's just because she, as a younger person, has had more exposure to this idea of what it is to be vegan.
So like when I was in college, I was broke, but I realized that everybody knew I was vegan. And so I was like, I wonder if I can make money selling vegan food to these people since they're kind of open to it.
Mm-hmm.
And so sure enough, that's what I did. I can make like these large dishes, like very simply and very cheaply.
Yeah.
And then I could still charge enough that it would still be cheap for them and I would make a profit.
That's fantastic.
And on top of that, I even had like, it had its own little charm. Like I made like a menu, like it was hand-drawn. And I said things like, have a funny name. So I had like sexy salad or something else, that, like kind of provocative and humorous.
So started your own little vegan company. I think that's fantastic. Selling food to students who don't want to cook, and it's vegan delicious food. Like you say, it's really cheap to make. So what? Very enterprising.
Yeah.
I like that.
And also, one of the places I work, they did have potlucks, like you mentioned. And so I usually focused on desserts.
Yeah.
And so people are like, "Oh, what's in that dessert?" You know, and they were surprised, and then they just asked for more of it, for the recipe.
Yeah.
And then some of those people started getting interested in the veganism because of that. They just didn't know that you can have good vegan food.
As you're talking, I'm thinking about the social movements in this modern day and age where we are quite fixated on personality. And I do feel that as we progress, there are more and more famous people who are now deciding to be vegan and are doing a lot of good. I'm thinking of Alicia Silverstone and other actresses and actors. So it's quite interesting to think about that as part of our social movement, about how important these kind of people are going to be, and also the risks involved in them identifying themselves as vegan, and then if they later fail or are seen to be failures in the public eye because of something that they have personally done.
Yeah, and actually I want to take that, I'm also thinking though more in line like there was only one Martin Luther King.
Yeah.
Right. There was only one, there was only one Cesar Chavez. It was these people who had just the right traits. And behind Martin Luther King, there was Bayard Rustin. He was a guy who organized, like he was just as instrumental in the civil rights movement, even though you've probably never heard of him.
Yeah.
Most people haven't.
No, I've not.
Yep. And so he couldn't be Martin Luther King, but he could be who he was. And so it's kind of recognizing too your personal strengths.
Yeah.
And your flaws. You know, if you got too many skeletons in your closet, then maybe it's not a good idea to do those things. It doesn't mean you can't help. It's just recognizing, think of it like, what are you strong at?
Yeah.
What are you good at?
Absolutely.
It's to think of it more like that.
Everyone playing to their own personal strengths. So just to round things off, we talked about all the different things that people can do, but I would still very much implore people, when there is an officially organized march, that they do go and take part in that march for animal rights. I'm thinking particularly of the annual official animal rights marches that Earthling Ed organizes that are now held in cities globally, because I think that when that does get on the news, because it does attract attention and people can see the vast numbers there, and as it gets bigger and bigger every year, I think that is definitely going to help drive change. Just to finish up, do you think the future is vegan? What are your final thoughts?
I am a cynic and a pessimist. I think a lot of people think of those people as like depressed point of view. And actually, I'm very positive. I just look at certain facts and economic decisions that have been made in this country that make me like that. And so do I think it is vegan? I have to say, it better be, because we're not going to make it very far unless it does, because if not now, there may not be a later.
Yeah.
And as time goes on, it's just prolonging the problem. And of course, I'm talking about like climate change, the exploitation of workers, the exploitation, and it entails the exploitation of animals. All these things are connected.
I have this shirt that says the future is vegan. And I think that a lot of people don't understand what that shirt means or symbolizes, especially if they're not a vegan at the moment. But just to explain that the future is vegan, and if the future is not vegan, then there is no future, because of the disastrous effect that animal agriculture is having on our environment. If we do move to a plant-based future, which is going to be really simple, really tasty, and completely viable, it would mean that we would be able to sustain ourselves. So countries like the UK, if they move to a fully plant-based way of eating, would be able to produce everything that they needed for the 60-plus million people that live in that country on that tiny island. So if we replicate that on, we can see that the world becomes sustainable, our civilization becomes sustainable. But if we continue down this road of eating meat, then we're going to run out of fresh water. The climate is going to continue to warm. We are not going to have the land available. We're going to decimate all of our environment and the wildlife and the wild creatures that are there. So the reason I wear the shirt, the future is vegan, is because it pretty much has to be, or there is no future. Thank you very much, Brad, for taking the time to spend with us today here at Vegan Online Academy.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to this Vegan Online Academy podcast. If you have been inspired to start your own vegan journey, or would like more support with the vegan journey that you're currently on, please log on to veganonlineacademy.com for more information about our courses.